Well, friends, in this episode, we get back in the skull truck and we take a ride. Yep, that's right. It's another sales call. It's another day in the life. And, you know, I say sales call, but really it's more networking. It's me meeting up with a friend from a previous employer, MX, surprise, surprise. And, you know, we do lunch, we chat, you know, of course, a lot of that isn't, any of that isn't on the video, but you get to join me in the skull truck where I talk about what is it I'm hoping to get out of this meeting, you know, and then towards the end, I get into some hot takes, some hot topics, some things that are on my mind, primarily AI and freaking OpenAI's, what do they call it, Cora? Or whatever, the text-to-video thing, and what that means exactly. So, join me. Let's do this. Well, welcome to another ride-along with your local friendly designer, Ike Allred. This time, we're doing our thing once again. It's all about the business development, the networking, like we talked about in the last episode. This time, I'm meeting a longtime friend, Dan Herbus. He's someone that I worked with at MX for a lot of years, and we've done some little collaborations on other things as well. He has his own company, you know, that he does on the side. He's still doing the day job thing. But we're essentially going to talk about how we can work better together. Now, before I forget, Dan's studio is Airbus Films, AIRBUS Films. Check that out. It's good stuff. He is a master at all things video, you know, from the cinematography, producing, directing, capturing of all that stuff, as well as, you know, being a ninja in Premiere and with color grading and all the fun post stuff, if you will. So, yeah, he's your live action go-to guy. And so, you know, our skill sets complement each other well. You know, myself, you know, obviously I do creative in general. I'm a full stack creative, is what I call myself. And, you know, some of what I'm working on that would help him is animation, motion design, and then obviously I've got people in my subcontracting quiver that can do that stuff as well, like my boy Trevor Williams and Christian Perry. So lots of good resources there. I can't name them all. So yeah. So essentially, we're gonna do a lunch. You know, he's gonna walk me around a studio space that he has access to. Maybe we'll be able to, I don't know, film some of that. I haven't talked to him about that ahead of time, so that may not be kosher, but we'll see what happens. And, you know, what do I want to get out of this? Well, first and foremost, a good lunch, right? No, but seriously, yeah, we're going to do lunch. I hope to, now let's back up a little bit, okay? So this morning, I reached a pretty big milestone in this consulting journey. I finished my first motion reel for Crater Studio, which, as you may or may not know, is the consulting wing of Create or Die LLC, you know, where we do the podcast and we create content, educational stuff. Crater, they're all about working B2B, creating those assets, business design related, and with a special focus on 3D visualization, motion design, animation, and interactive experiences, including websites. So, that's enough of that. A little plug, if you will. I really need to figure out how to do better audio on this, so I apologize. We're just picking up a lot of road noise and different things. You know, I have the tools, but it's like, do I really want to worry about a bunch of lab mics and external audio recorders and all that? I think there's some attachments to the GoPro that I'm going to look into to rig up better mics, you know, like have the lab mics go directly to the GoPro so I don't have to have a separate recorder. Just all these things that you got to consider when you're doing your thing as your own self, right? So as we continue on this journey to Midvale from Saratoga Springs, where I live, I thought, hey, let's just kind of, you know, we already talked about the HAPS, what I'm going to do. Now, what are some things outside of this meeting that's going on? And I'll tell you, I find myself doing a lot of client work, and a lot of that is done, unfortunately, after work hours, because I've essentially traded my day job, 9-to-5 time slot, for this type of stuff, you know, networking, reaching out to people on LinkedIn, creating social posts, different things that, I need to change lanes here, I don't know, it's a little iffy, I gotta be careful with what I'm doing here, gotta drive first and foremost, right? Hopefully the person behind me isn't mad. That's the bad thing about driving in the Skull Truck too, let me tell you. You know, you got your brand plastered all over your vehicle and ways for people to contact you, so you've got to drive carefully, right? Respectfully. You don't want to piss anyone off, because that's not going to be good, because they're going to know how to find you and could damage your brand, right? So yeah, things to consider. But yeah, where were we? So during the day, 9-to-5, like I mentioned, I find myself doing a lot of the business development, the operations, communication, meetings, and then after that, 5 p.m. to midnight, is a lot of client work, cranking stuff out. Now, it doesn't mean client work doesn't get done in the day. It does. But, you know, unless there's like a strict deadline, I end up saving a lot of that for the evenings or even the weekends. And as a solopreneur, which is what I currently am, with aspirations of becoming full-on entrepreneur, right, and having a business and employees, you know, I gotta do stuff by myself, the majority of it. Got a couple contractors, and that's awesome, but we're still trying to figure stuff out, you know. On LinkedIn a week or so ago, you know, I mentioned my journey and tracking pipeline, or the importance of, you know, like 4x coverage. Those things I know are important, but am I really tracking them as well as I should? No, of course not. I'm running around with my head cut off like a chicken with his head cut off. I think that's the way it's meant to be said. So it's tricky. This is tricky. So, and then what was brought up in one of the comments was, you know, hey, what KPIs are you tracking? Now, I know what a KPI is in terms of that's a metric that, you know, you need to measure. But I had forgotten what the actual acronym stood for. So I had to look that up. And I'm forgetting what it was, right? KPI. I would always think, you know, key point of interest. That's not right. It's, what is it? Performance? Yeah, I shouldn't have brought it up because I'm slaughtering it. I apologize. But anyways, some of the KPIs I mentioned that I, you know, am tracking casually and want to do more of and be more proficient and professional at are, for example, you know, win rate, you know, cost to acquire a customer, you know, like I go off, do these lunches, you know, if you want to talk about my time that it takes to put together like a proposal or be on some sales calls, all that stuff adds up, you know. And then, you know, what is my retention rate? What are some other KPIs? You know, efficiency rate, I forget them all. But those are all important things, and those are the things that I'm trying to focus on during the day, and I want to find more time to focus on the website. You know, I'm pulling together this creator.studio website. Designed it. It's in a finished state, but I'm second guessing myself, you know. Are the colors what I want? You know, do I need to niche down a little more? You know, is there ways to simplify it, or is it simple enough? All those things. And I keep telling myself done is better than perfect, right? Yeah, that's true. But there's, you know, it's a scale. What level of done can I accept at this point? You know, I do have a presence on LinkedIn for creator.studio. I have the reel done, like I mentioned, which is a huge accomplishment. And I put that on LinkedIn today, sent that out to some prospects who are considering leveraging my services. You know, it's been interesting. Web design seems to be kind of the biggest need, especially in startup land, or you have companies that have kind of dealt with their good enough website for long enough and they're ready to adjust. Well, and that's an interesting point, and it makes sense. I mean, in this day and age, your website is, in my opinion, the most important asset, and here I am without one right now. Right, I've just got my reel up there and a logo for your company. I mean, so many uses, you know, so many people, that's their first touch point for you, you know. And it used to be, you know, brick and mortar, or I've got a San Francisco location, and so you had these, you know, WeWork and flexible office space, and you can, you know, rent a few hours a week or a month and then leverage that address for your company. And it was like, oh wow, they've got a San Francisco address. They must be legit, right? I think companies figured that out. But now it's the website. And people, you know, yeah, your website is used as a place to do commerce, right? You can sell things. It's a place where, you know, you can convert leads or, yeah. And, but I think in a lot of industries, and I would say consulting, what I do is definitely one of those, is your website is there simply for companies that, or people, individuals that you meet or are referred to you, when they go to your website, primarily just to confirm that you look legit. It doesn't need to be the absolute best thing they've ever seen in their life and win awards, but it does need to feel like it's on par with the competition, right? Because, you know, in a lot of cases, you've been referred to this individual or organization by a trusted third party, right? Someone that company trusts and works with, and someone that you trust and work with. A connector. And that referral, them vouching for you, which I know it's like, duh. Thanks for overstating the obvious, Ike, right? No, but that goes a long way. It really does. And so there are some cases where that referral, the word of this other person is enough to get your first project. You know, it's like, just trust me, I've worked with him or her or that company for X amount of years. They are reliable, they do amazing work, and you can trust them, and I'm staking my reputation on it. And there's, you know, a fraction, I don't know, 5% of opportunities where that's enough. But in the vast majority, you know, at least 90% of times, you know, that is a good first step, but they want to see proof. They want to see with their own eyes, like, yeah, okay, this person's worked with some reputable brands, or, you know, I'm looking at a reel, this is impressive, they're doing, you know, quality work, I can see that, I can envision, you know, that type of treatment that they used in this design or animation being used for my company and in what I do. And so if those two things are there, you've got the referral and you've got the website that's just on par with your competition, your win rate, close rate is going to go through the roof. So those are the scenarios that you want. And so that's why I'm so excited about, you know, getting the reel pulled together and out in the wild today. And guess what? It's not the best animation design. Doesn't represent a huge variety of brands. It's mostly MX, because that's where I've been for the past 6 years. But it does show a decent amount of different styles and techniques, and it's good enough. And that, my friends, is done. And done is better than perfect, right? All right, friends. Well, another successful networking lunch complete. I thought about pulling out the GoPro to capture some of the, the real business that was gonna go on there, but didn't seem appropriate. And, it was quick. Dan is down to business, so just didn't come together, like I said, so that's cool. But let me kind of paint you a picture of what transpired, if you will, and perhaps that will help you out. So, started out, Dan has a warehouse space that is actually pretty cool. It's got little offices in there. It's got an upstairs, a downstairs. He's got, a place set up that works like a, set for like some kind of a show, like could do a podcast or something. Hey, I do one of those. And there's also a place for, product photography set up. So that's definitely something that we are looking into. And he asked if I had need for a physical location like that. And, I told him currently I don't. But, depending on how things go, and if we end up doing a lot of work together, Dan and I, then, things could change. But yeah, Dan gave me a little tour of his space. He's got some fun locations there, good equipment. It was fun. And then, most importantly, had some lunch. We walked over to a local taco truck, which, I don't frequent all the time. Certainly not that one. Well, that's another thing is, I'm out there in Saratoga. I don't know if I really want to be coming out here this far all the time. That's one of the beauties of working for myself, is the fact that I don't have to deal with a commute every day and lose time and dollars as a result, right? So we'll see what happens. But yeah, lunch was a taco truck. I had a pollo burrito. I always feel weird. Dan is a native Spanish speaker, and he was talking to the proprietor in Spanish. And, I understood 75% of it because it's pretty straightforward. But then when it comes down to it, I can never say gracias. I don't know why. Maybe that's one of those resolutions. Because when I went to, back in the day, back in Roseville, used to go to this amazing Russian place, and I had some Russian co-workers, friends, and they just taught me a couple things to say, Dostadanya, spasiba, babushka, right? Hello, thank you, and grandma, which can come in handy. Das vidanya, babushka, spasiba. And of course, I don't know if that is grammatical. grammatically correct or the structure of that sentence, but there you go. But yeah, at the Russian place, I didn't have a problem with saying spasiba or dat svidaniya, because, you know, it was pretty clear that I was the dumb American that probably isn't speaking this language that isn't second to English like Spanish is, right? Whereas, especially here in Utah, you've got a lot of people who have gone out of the country to Spanish-speaking nations and speak it as a second language, and then it's also taught in all the schools. So if you're someone who, you know, went to public school, you probably took some Spanish. So if I start saying gracias and other Spanish words besides burrito and pollo, then they might say something in Spanish, and then I have to mention that, you know, no habla español, you know, little bit. I don't even know what the term I would, if someone said the word for a little bit in Spanish, I would understand it, but I can't think of what it is off the top of my head. Yeah. But it was tasty. You know, they put more, you know, I asked Dan what comes in the burrito, and it was chicken, rice, beans, and cheese, and, you know, the tomato salsa that you kind of just, pico de gallo, yeah, that's what they said. But this was some kind of real, like, native hardcore pico, because we had like quarter size peppers in there, and I don't remember seeing tomatoes unless they were these big red things that I thought were probably, you know, red bell peppers. So it was good. I probably ate bigger chunks of peppers than what I'm usually accustomed to, but hey, it worked. And if I saw one coming up in the next bite, I would just kind of knock it off onto the plate, like it happened on accident or something. Because I don't know what... You dice up those bell peppers. It's fairly small. You add onions and tomatoes and other salsa goodness. I'm great. That's good. I love it. But you give me these big old chunks of especially green peppers, bell peppers, that's not my jam. So just keep that in mind in case you are looking to make me some pico or salsa. But yeah, well, so essentially, you know, we had the lunch and talked, and really what came out of it was good. I mean, Dan and I want to work more together. We've always talked about that. Our skill sets complement each other well, which is awesome. But it sounds like he has interest in doing like some spec work for some big brand. And this is something that's actually on my to-do list, you know, for a Nike or Adidas shoe brand or something that could be used in a reel or in portfolio, so that Dan and I can both, you know, independently be selling each other's services. You know, it was interesting as we were waiting for our food to be made, prepared, there outside the taco truck, which I'm glad it wasn't raining, because it is now. As we were waiting, Dan was asking me about, you know, who are my clients, how's that going, how are you getting new work, you know, he's got a handful of clients and his day job and stuff. And I was talking to him about that, and, you know, maybe we'll get to that specific conversation later, but somewhere in our exchange was the conversation about roles and how they're changing. So for video, for example, you know, he's noticing that companies aren't hiring video producer, cinematographer, video editor anymore, or at least as frequently or as prevalently as they once were. And I told him, yeah, you know, I mean, I assume part of that has to do with the economy and the market, and, you know, companies are outsourcing some of that stuff. But he did say that instead of the traditional role of videographer, got the burp hiccups. I hate that. So yeah, Dan mentioned that, you know, they're not hiring for those traditional roles like videographer. Instead, they're hiring social media video professional or something, and they expect that person to create videos for social media, and they're probably, you know, lower polished, quick, just kind of capturing stuff like this and editing it and throwing it up on the different social sites and landscape, portrait, square, you know, formats. And their chart, you know, their budget for those roles are a lot smaller than what they were for video producer, you know, videographer, you know, head of video, whatever the roles were, the Dan, who's probably a great dancer, once held. And so that's interesting. So is it the economy and, you know, the idea that these different companies just don't value some of this stuff as much? Or is it that these roles are actually changing and they see video as important, but it's just about producing quick content? I don't know. I guess time will tell, you know? And that brings me to another subject, which frankly gives me a little anxiety, and I have to continue to sucker myself or put myself at ease, whatever the correct term is, and that's AI. You know, I know I talk a big game and I talk about how there will always be place for the human and human creativity, and AI is just another tool, just like the computer, yada yada yada, right? But then you get something like this stupid OpenAI Cora, you know, text-to-video technology that's actually looking pretty good. And you see how fast AI is evolving. And I'll be honest, it's hard to stay positive. It's hard to stay focused. You know, I just know, because I'm a human and I see what's transpired over the past 45 years of my life, and even prior to that, that new
new technology comes along and it has its place and it definitely changes things, usually for the better. You know, it makes tedious tasks go away a lot of the time, and so all that's good. But we've never dealt with something quite like this. We're talking a whole another level of intelligence. You know, we're dealing with another intelligent life form, for lack of a better word, right? You know, human expression and creativity, we've always been able to hang our hat on how hard it is to replicate the human brain or, you know, replicate our ability to be creative. You know, there could be some different kind of programming tricks created, but in the end, that's all they were, and they fell apart pretty quick. AI, in these early stages, you know, they're still limited, but it's not like traditional technology where, you know, yeah, maybe in 5-10 years it'll reach this point where it's a real contender because there's humans behind it building it, and they're only so smart. No, we're talking exponential speed of innovation, right? Because you're using these large learning models or large language models as bigger brain power, and you know, changes like from ChatGPT 3.5 to 4 were like in orders of magnitude bigger. It wasn't just an incremental increase. It was light years ahead of the predecessor version, whatever. So stuff's gonna improve fast. Does that mean that humans will be displaced? No, but it does mean that these tools are here to stay.
So there you have it, another successful ride with Ike in the school truck, and surprise, surprise, we didn't crash. That's always the goal. Like I tell my kids when I'm teaching them how to drive, rule number one is don't hit anything, right? Rule number one. Rule number two is like unto it. Refer to rule number one. You don't hit anything. So we're successful in fulfilling both rule number one and number two. And you know, I got kind of cut off thanks to the weather, the hail coming down on the vehicle. It got a little loud. So just to kind of close my thoughts on AI and whether it's impending doom for all of us creators, I'm going to say no. That's a definite no. Now, in the past, you know, 15 hours in between me actually talking in the school truck to me recording this outro, I came across something on LinkedIn from a small animation studio. The CEO got on there and shared his thoughts on, you know, this new text to video prompt stuff. And he had a really interesting point. He basically said that the difference between AI and us humans is, you know, AI didn't wake up Saturday mornings excited to watch 4 hours straight of cartoons and hasn't been able to tap into, you know, what it felt like as a kid to anticipate those things, what it was you were looking for, and how any experiences that we have get translated into our work. And in the end, his hypothesis, and I tend to agree, is that that ultimately is what the end user is buying when they buy your t-shirt or they watch your series on Netflix or they appreciate your website that you designed or your, you know, original song, whatever it is. It's that piece of you that you're sharing from your human experience, something that AI can only copy and will never be able to live a real human experience. It's just the definition is not there, right? We'll get closer, sure. But, you know, in the short term, his hypothesis, and I agree, is CEOs will think, hey, we can cut this many jobs, we can get in there, do our prompts, make things happen, but that'll only get them so far, and they'll start to realize that there is some magic, there's something to this human element, and let's bring it back, and let's make it better. Let's use AI maybe to get through some of the tedious stuff like rotoscoping or, you know, background animations or whatever, the stuff that can be in the background, essentially the things that are key to the story and are uniquely human. I believe, and this CEO of unnamed animation studio would agree. So let's just boldly keep creating, right? Let's just do it. Let's just draw on our experiences, dig deep. It's not just copying something you see, acting like a machine. It's like really dig deep and think about what would I want to consume? How can I share a piece of myself, a moment in time from 40 years ago, whatever it is, and put that on the page, on the screen, in the sound mixer, whatever. So, until next time, my friends, keep on creating. Create or die.